Welcome to Kibitz and Bits, where we argue information security and draw lessons from the weekly Torah portion.
A Torah portion is the biblical reading in the Jewish scriptures for a given week. So we're clear, we're not Torah experts.
30-odd episodes in, we're getting there. I mean, maybe we're at least getting to be barely cybersecurity experts.
Us? Security experts? Nah. But we do have opinions and we're going to share them with you.
And you are joining this weekly podcast in 2020 or 5780, depending on your point of view. And this is episode 38 for the week of July 5th. I am Wolf, and by day, I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
So Dave, what's this week's Torah portion?
Well, in this week's Parshat, it's Pinchas. And this is just kind of another section in Numbers where they were doing a census, and in fact, for reference, it is Numbers 25:10 through 26:51 for the triennial year one. So they go through the census, kind of naming names and counts of people and things like that. But later on, in section 26:9 through 26:10, there's a reference back to, if you recall, the Parsha Korah, where Korah is a person who was challenging Moses's position within the community, and why him, why not me, and so on and so forth. But it was kind of a callback to more of this cautionary tale of Korah and his sons and all the other Jewish people that were, you know, their constituents getting swallowed up by the earth. And, you know, it reminded us of how in InfoSec, and it's possible in other industries too, but we're going to keep this more to InfoSec, in our community, we're very quick in some cases to nail people to the wall. I could go on in a lot of different examples, but I just want to keep it high level for now. And one of the things that when we're doing that, you know, it's if somebody makes a mistake, it's okay to politely correct them. It's okay to show the facts, right? Science is based on facts, not opinions. But sometimes these punishments don't necessarily fit the crime. If somebody makes an honest mistake and you could present the facts and they say, yeah, I'm sorry, it should end there. It shouldn't become this big dramatic thing that gets the whole community distracted from what's important. And unfortunately, it's just all too common in our industry. So what are your thoughts on that, Wolf?
Yeah, I like where you're going with this. And it's going to be an interesting conversation today because I suspect we're going to be more discussing than arguing, given the fact that there are certainly some benefits of calling people out. There's certainly some benefits of calling companies out for bad practices or identifying vulnerabilities. There's certainly some benefits to what has been called the internet's immune system, which is of course hackers, right? Hackers are the internet's immune system. Lots of people have said that. It came to my attention through Karen Elazari on the TED stage, if you want to check out that TED talk. But the idea is that it's incumbent upon us to look for weaknesses, to look for vulnerabilities, to look for issues in our community, and to point those out and go ahead and address them, to fix them. The challenge is, the downside is, the negative side is exactly what you mentioned, right? We don't want to say, ah, well, hacker John Jane Doe said something wrong. Let's make sure the earth opens up and swallows her whole, and she becomes an example for all of eternity about what not to do. That is the risk that we take when we take these things too far.
Yeah, exactly. So first I want to reiterate that hacker is the internet's immune system. I'm going to go look for that TED talk from Karen Elizari because that seems to resonate very strongly with me. And I do agree, right? Without the hackers, the ethical hackers, there wouldn't be as much innovation that we have today. We wouldn't be calling certain manufacturers out when they make mistakes and they have software defects that create vulnerabilities. But I think in that case, when you're kind of talking about software manufacturers, hardware manufacturers, any kind of manufacturers, anyone who's producing something, whether it's a product for purchase or some free open source software, you know, I think there's a certain amount of courtesy that's required, and there are some guiding principles under responsible disclosure, which really are designed for researchers or somebody who stumbles across a bug on how to report those. And I found in certain cases, there are some researchers who are super stringent to the letter. If the 45 days is the minimum amount of time I'm going to give that particular software manufacturer, then that's all I'm going to give them. And they might release something and they cause that software manufacturer to scramble to have a patch ready in time, right? Who really wants to get caught with their britches down when a researcher is exposing all their vulnerabilities, and there could be, you know, a proof of concept, and it could be a tool, and that's just not good for everybody. But then there's others who are, in my mind, very courteous, and they'll do the disclosure, but they might give the software manufacturer more time. And I personally am happy to see when somebody goes, here is my research, here's what I found, there's a proof of concept, but it doesn't work anymore because it's been patched in this version on this platform.
Yes. And the major initiatives for finding those have adopted disclosure periods, right? So Google Project Zero has a 90-day disclosure period, for example. The Zero-Day Initiative has a 120-day disclosure period. So if either of those projects find something, they disclose it first to the vendor. They give the vendor time to patch and make some modifications, put in some either preventative or compensating control to address that vulnerability. And then after that 90-day or 120-day period, they do a public disclosure. So I do like that, as opposed to some of the old days where, hey, I found a vulnerability and I want to make my bones and I want to make my name, and I'm going to make my name and my bones by, you know, sticking vendor X to the wall and showing about how bad their code is. Well, vendor X has to then scramble to, you know, patch and get things into place. So responsible disclosure makes a lot of sense to me. It does mean, of course, that there is a longer window, perhaps, where we are all vulnerable.
And that introduces the risk of, if, let's say, researcher A, ethical researcher A, found this vulnerability and was able to create the exploit, then what we don't know is about the unethical researchers who found it and are using it for monetization, right? For their own personal financial gain. So to me, it's kind of like that double-edged sword. We need to get that fix out there as quick as possible, because we don't know who else knows about this. And I've actually even seen in one talk where somebody was talking about how with some of these exploits, that there are literally different nation states that would kill to have them, literally kill, not just, you know, pine for. And that goes to show you the level of monetization that's out there with some of these exploits. And it's a serious thing. And some people, you know, we kind of have become numb to the patch Tuesday. Oh, there's another vulnerability. We hear them all the time. It's another day in the office. But some of these are very, very serious. One other aspect that I was thinking of is it's the promotion of finding these vulnerabilities in the industry through certain conferences. But there are these conferences where a researcher will hold on to their findings, and they may disclose responsibly, which is great. But then they go to this event and the world knows about their research. You did a great job. Congratulations. And then they go and start a business, right? That's fine, I guess. Not for me, but I guess if they have a business where they're going to keep these practices of, you know, for the greater good, okay. Everybody's got to make a living. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to do it again to just kind of really focus on promoting your brand, you're a hero, you're a rock star, or whatever it might be, I don't know if that's for the right reasons.
Yes, and we've definitely seen the development of the conference researcher. Right? You find something and you hold on to it until conference season. You hold on to it until Hacker Summer Camp. And when that happens in August, that means we know September and October are going to be scrambling patching things. Another intriguing aspect of hackers as an immune system is that an immune system is guided by whatever it finds. It's not guided by publicity per se, right? And if you think about what makes the news, what makes the news is something new, something different, something unusual, something rare. So for example, do you know how many critical vulnerabilities, remote code executable vulnerabilities were found in Internet Explorer last year, Dave?
I will say 14.
14. 14 is the number. So
is it right?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
don't get excited. Don't get excited. I'm going to put a pin in that. In 2009, 10 years ago, there was Operation Aurora, which started by this zero-day exploit Internet Explorer. And everyone right around that time then started hammering Internet Explorer and finding all these vulnerabilities. And everything you could find was publicized and people talked about it. It was on Twitter and social media and everything else. And in that time, there's maybe 50 critical vulnerabilities found in the following year. 2019, I know this because I recently did a presentation on it. It wasn't 14 vulnerabilities. It wasn't 15. It was 137 critical vulnerabilities identified and patched in Internet Explorer.
Wow, and that's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive that they found them. It's very impressive they're patched.
Yeah.
But not one of those made the news. Not one of those would have gotten you a ticket at insert conference name here.
Why not?
Well, because no one cares about Internet Explorer anymore.
Oh, well, okay. You know, it's the fact that you say that, and on my gaming PC, literally 2 days ago, literally yesterday, I had to reboot it, and I was forced to do an update, and I saw a brand new version of Internet Explorer and Edge.
Yeah. So you think about what happens in social media. This, in a way, I believe security is tied to a broader social movement. And you mentioned earlier that this probably happens in other industries, but in this particular talk, we're talking about cybersecurity. Absolutely. In the broader context, you have things like call out culture and cancel culture, where one thing happens and collectively we all dogpile, right? We get the pitchforks, we get the torches, and we make sure that the earth swallows up and swallows them whole. So if you imagine any software package out there right now, if there was a vulnerability found in phone X and one person noticed that and made some hay, next thing you know, all these researchers are going to jump on phone X and you're going to hear about hundreds of vulnerabilities in phone X and we should cancel phone X and no one should use phone X and phone X is terrible. And how could, if you were responsible, how could you use phone X? Think of the children. Because that's what happens, right? If you think about like the last three or four big waves, and I'm not going to name them because I don't want to add to the noise, where the immune system was turned on a particular company, how much of that was because that particular company had more vulnerabilities? And how much of that was because by attacking that company, you could gain more credibility and more attention?
Well, it's that whole kind of watering hole mentality, right? If there's a lot of people using something and you can get them to that watering hole and that's where you could get into the watering hole and that's where your attack is and your payload. And you could then take advantage of them, right? Because, you know, they got to drink water. But if you can get them to the watering hole and that's where your attack is and that's where you could then jump on that. Well, that's where most of the water buffalo are going to go anywhere. If you're going to go on a platform, like you mentioned, Internet Explorer, and there's really not that many people still using it, you don't get as much benefit. It's kind of a very small pond at that point, right? So it makes sense that they're going to go after Phone X, which I get it. You know, if they've got a big market share, it's just easier to go after them. They're going to be more successful. I mean, I don't see why that would be much of a surprise. As far as the researchers go, for them, I think, you know, and again, I've done some research. I don't know if you can call me a researcher or not, but it's also low-hanging fruit. So kind of going back to the other part of our argument, if I'm going to do research on something, first of all, I wanted something that I know is going to be big Secondly, I want it to be something that I could do quickly before my competition, so then I can kind of claim it before them. So if there is some phone X that's easy to break into or is easy to exploit, why not? It's low-hanging fruit. Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. If, in fact, the driver is based on market adoption. So I recently did an analysis of four different controls for a blog I got coming up on design. And it was intriguing to me that early platforms, early adoptions, if they're less than 20% of market share, they don't get much attention at all. Why? Because the attackers are attacking the majority. So that makes sense to me. If that's the reason. If the reason is we're all dogpiling on a company or on a technology, because that's where, you know, the media is, that's where I get very suspicious. And that's where I wonder if cancel culture and call out culture isn't overlapping with disclosure culture.
Definitely is overlapping. When it comes to that cancel culture, I watch it because of the human behavior factor to see how are people going to respond on either side. But I don't subscribe to it as a way to, one, build my brand, two, kind of set things right. I just don't feel like that's the way people should treat each other. I think that if you go, I don't know. I just learned that you can, you know, kill them with kindness, catch more flies with honey than vinegar, be courteous. And if somebody makes a mistake, it's very easy to say, hey, look, I noticed that you did this. Here's the facts. Do you agree or disagree? You disagree, well, show me your facts. Maybe I'm making a mistake. And then eventually come to some kind of agreement of what the facts might be. And hey, if it's two of you, maybe, you know, third person. But the whole dogpiling, not a fan of, big turnoff, doesn't really make things better. Just, in fact, makes things worse. And then the other part I wanted to mention is there's really no coincidence that when you're about a month away from insert hacker conference here, there tends to be an uptick in security vulnerability article.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, with that, Dave, I like what you're saying about pulling people aside, being courteous, talking one-on-one to give them feedback as the individual. What do you think the analog to that is about companies? Should you find a vulnerability or should you be doing that immune system approach? What's the right way to pull the company aside, put your arm around them, take them out for coffee and say, look, bro?
It's difficult to answer that. And I'll tell you why, because I know from having read articles and talked to some researchers, they've taken that approach and the companies come back and say, we don't see that as a vulnerability. We're not taking that seriously. Have a nice day. And it gets shut down. Now, nobody likes that. And that is both sides not being courteous. I believe, in my opinion, that both sides need to be courteous. Companies need to listen to researchers and vice versa. That's how we move forward in the same direction, not take a defensive approach. So I hope that answers your question, but at least, again, from my opinion, if a researcher approaches an organization, the organization should take it seriously. Now, I can get it. They might get hundreds of these things a day and they need to figure it out. Well, if you're getting hundreds a day, you should have a team figuring it out for you. And researchers, don't be so sensitive if a company doesn't take it so seriously and then retaliate, because they are also inundated with these kinds of requests. Taking them out for coffee, that sounds like a great idea. It probably won't happen. But really, what people need to do is just be a bit more patient with one another and really kind of express the fact that, for example, with a company or research, hey, I'm going to disclose this if you don't respond, not in a threatening way, but more of a public awareness way for the public benefit.
Yes. And the public benefit is really what we're talking about here. I like that you brought it back to that point. If we are going to be the immune system, if we are going to have a hacker culture that looks out for one another and tells you if you got spinach in your teeth, or the research culture that helps identify 0 days and helps companies close them before the bad guys are using them. You know, we do need to continue making an example out of bad behavior and pushing forward to make sure that bad behavior, bad code, gets addressed and gets resolved. But your point earlier, I think, is really resonating, is that we need to, especially right now with everything going on, have a degree of patience and be kinder than necessary in our dealings with individuals, in our dealings with organizations, whether we're looking at the conversations that people are having or the code that people are writing. We absolutely have a obligation to make the internet a better place, but in doing so, we need to do so in a way that doesn't backfire and create other issues and create toxicity.
Love it. I'm verklempt. Love it. So what you're saying is, don't just swallow them up into the earth. Let's talk. And I completely agree with it. So folks, this has been Kibitzing Bits with Wolf and Dave. Please stay tuned. Listen to the sponsor message. The sponsor message helps support this podcast and anything additional over our costs. We donate to a charity of our choice. So please, also, if you have an opinion, leave a voice message within the Anchor app, whether you agree with Wolf or myself, or hey, maybe you got your own opinion. We'd love to hear it. And if it's something that we could play back, we will and comment on. So folks, stay healthy, everyone. Question truth and be better.